Welcome to the Linux Journal Insider for August 2010, the Cool Projects issue. I'm Sean Powers, and with me again this month is Kyle Rankin. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, hey, hey.
So, this is the Cool Projects issue, one of my favorite issues every year, and although it's not in the magazine, I'm working on a cool project myself right now. Do you want to hear about it?
Oh, yeah, please do.
All right. Now, Google Voice is now open, meaning that it's no longer in private invite-only beta, so you can actually set up a Google Voice account right now. But I want you to finish listening to the podcast first. But anyway, if you sign up for that and you think, wouldn't it be great to do away with my home phone? I actually did that. My home phone is now Google Voice, and I'm not using like a home phone or things forwarded to it. I'm using all online tools, free SIP accounts, this SIP Sorcery, which is like an online site that manages multiple SIP sites. But basically, you pick up a phone in my house, you get a dial tone, you dial, and the other side rings, and they see my Google Voice number on the caller ID, and if they call Google Voice, my home phone rings, and I'm not paying a dime. It's pretty cool.
That is really cool. In fact, that sounds like a future article to me.
You know, I think maybe that deserves to go on the website with like links to do stuff, because I made a bunch of mistakes along the way. Like, I have some hardware on my desk that I bought before asking the experts, and I had literally just bought a device that didn't work great for me, and one of the people on Twitter that follows me, Jason, actually said, "Hey, you probably don't want to buy that one." It was already bought. So, yes, I have tips, because there's some devices that don't work great and some that do. Because the trick is you have to have an ATA device that turns your regular phone into a SIP device. And that's the cool thing. But that will be on the web. It's exciting. The Cool Projects issue just brings it out in me. I just couldn't help myself. So that's what I've been working on for the past few days while my wife is out of town.
Oh, that sounds like the perfect project. So she's going to come back and all of her phones are going to be plugged into weird devices.
No. I hooked it all up into the wiring in the walls. It's just right in the kitchen. Our rental place? Yeah, I'm not allowed to like put holes in the walls and stuff. So, so yeah, it's all wired. I even have a second one for my fax machine. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But that'll be on the web. This month, we're talking about the magazine, and it's the Cool Projects issue, and I'm going to start us out with a simple approach to character drivers in user space by Bob Smith. And I got to say, a simple approach is kind of relative, because for me, it's a lot to chew. This is a low-level article. Now, don't get me wrong. He goes through and talks about methodology for picking how to write device drivers and stuff, and it's a really great way to see the company that's providing the hardware. Also, this is the article that has the cool Chumby on Wheels on the cover. So if you look at that and, wow, that's just awesome, I want one, well, you can make one, because Bob shows us how. But basically, it's talking about setting up and creating a driver in user space instead of kernel space. And this device that is accessible, and you can hook it to a USB port on your computer, all you have to do on the kernel level is have USB support, which, you know, every modern kernel has USB support. So from there, it's all user space stuff, which allows you to do a lot of stuff, and it takes a lot of the work away from the vendor, who probably doesn't want to spend time keeping up with kernel revisions and stuff like that. So it's a really neat idea and a neat way to interact with robot parts.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting approach to do it that way. I mean, you hear here and there arguments about the Linux kernel and about whether or not it's really difficult for vendors to not just write a driver, but keep the driver working through every kernel revision. I mean, you even see people like Google forking off the kernel and then, you know, for Android and then bringing it back eventually. But yeah, this is a really interesting approach to sidestep that in a way. Use a module you already have working and then sort of use a user space environment to access all these it's worth it for the picture alone of the Chumby on Wheels. That gets me every time.
It's true. And, you know, from a developer standpoint, you know, or the vendor, I mean, if, you know, somebody else is going to keep the USB kernel driver current, you don't have to worry about that. So I think that's it's a great approach. And it's a great article. It really goes into depth about thinking through the process on how to write the driver. So it's great. And whether it's good weather or bad weather, I'm not even going to try that weak segue. Well, go ahead, Kyle. What's your article about?
So my article is called Using WView by Mark Thiel. And what Mark goes into is this application called WView, which is essentially a piece of software that you can run under Linux, of course. And it interfaces with a number of different hardware weather stations. You can get a lot of different devices, and he goes over a lot of the different ones that are compatible. And they all will pull weather. Presumably you'd stick this outside of your house. And they get, you know, temperature and barometer readings and everything like that. And then it connects to your computer. And all this data that comes in, WView will store it in a database, categorize everything, and then will provide this great interface for carving through all of this data. So that kind of reminded me of a WRT kind of interface, you know, for a Linksys router or things like that. Similar kind of, well, the colors probably were reminded me of it, but just really handy way to see all of these stats and nice little gauges and things like that. But the article goes beyond how to set up the first just the main service, and talks about the fact that there's a lot of sort of weather cooperative weather projects out there where people, like, for example, the Citizen Weather Observer Program, which includes the NOAA. So the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So everyone sort of pulls their data together. So if you're a real weather nut and you want to know, you know, you're really into tracking weather, you can add your data to this big collaboration of data. So he goes into that, and he talks about a couple other interesting projects that you can contribute your data to and then get data back. So if you're really into getting weather information and having a nice interface, so you're not just looking out at a LED screen that says what the temperature is, but really nice graphs and history and things like that, this is the project to install.
That's really cool. I'm kind of a weather junkie, not a fanatic necessarily, but I've actually considered getting a weather station, you know, for my house. I just think that'd be really cool. But the more I think about it, you know, I work at a school, and probably it would make more sense for, you know, to get a weather station at the school where the science program could manage it, keep up with it. They would be able to see, you know, the students would be able to see how, you know, all the data gathered around from people would interact and, you know, be able to, well, I won't say forecast the weather well, because it's not, you know, magic, but have a lot better information out there. It's actually pretty cool. And
Plus it's open, so it's not like, you know, if you're going to do it in your school. I'm sure there are other weather station-like projects, but you'd probably have to have – they probably run some sort of custom firmware on the devices, you know.
Yeah, that's probably true. And, you know, if we wanted to make our own custom firmware, bah, 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 good segue. The next thing that I'm going to talk about is building custom firmware with OpenWRT. And this is by Mike Petullo. And now I have to admit, I don't know what kind of router you run at your house, Kyle, but I have the old blue Linksys, you know, WRT54G. And I run DDWRT on it, and I know that that makes me a horrible open source person because it's not an open project, but it works really well and it's easy to put on. So I've always just left well enough alone. I mean, obviously,
I do it too. That's me. Yeah. So you don't have to feel bad.
Okay. Okay.
But you still get letters, but you don't have to feel bad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't leave the stock firmware on there or anything because I want it to do more than that. But after reading this article, I got to be honest. Now, OpenWRT, it works on a bunch. It used to only work on the Linksys Blue routers, but now it works on a bunch of hardware. You can check out the website for, you know, which models it'll work on. But it's, you know, you can compile your own firmware, which is basically the operating system for the router, and have it do whatever you want. You know, NFS server, media streamer. And Mike goes through and shows us all kinds of options and walks us through the whole process on how you actually, you know, download the build environment and compile the firmware and upload it and, you know, get console on the device. It's actually really, really cool. And I have to admit, the cool projects issue every year inspires me to do something crazy. And since I have an extra router laying around, and I wouldn't be taking our house offline and, you know, getting the wrath of my family, it's something I'm probably going to check out because I like the idea of being able to do specific features that DDWRT doesn't support. And so far I've just been like, ah, that's okay. But why not? If we can do it, you know, do whatever we want. I like that idea a lot better.
Yeah, I really like this article in that at the end of the article, he goes over in detail how to recover your brick WRT after you apply firmware that for some reason doesn't work. So, I mean, that section of the article would be useful even if you didn't compile your own custom firmware, but you just installed something and bricked it. So,
very, very cool. So, you have one more article, Kyle. What's this one about?
Yeah, so my last article I'm going to talk about is real-time plots with KST and a microcontroller, and this is by Rob Riley. So Rob starts off, this article is about this software called KST, which is a piece of KDE software that does real-time graphing. It can graph, it's a piece of graphing software like GNU Plot or like a lot of the other plotting software, but it's a nice, easy-to-use graphical program, and it allows you to do real-time graphing. So if the file that you're pointing at and have configured to graph updates in real time, it will redraw the graph for you and update it in real time. So he starts off by talking about how that works and how to set up a couple graphs with certain labels and things like that. And then he goes into a whole primer on Arduino, which is really useful. If you've heard about Arduino and you really haven't looked at, I mean, we've had articles in the past about Arduino here and there, but if you know, this is a really good introduction to the platform if you haven't heard about it before. And he talks about how he set up his own Arduino device, how he used the development environment to write some custom software that would read from some sensors he plugged in. Basically, he hooked up a temperature sensor and a photocell into his Arduino, and then he talks about how he interfaced that with his computer and to start polling and getting weather data, or not weather, temperature data and photocell data. And then he talks about how then he used KST to graph that in real time so he can look at any moment and see, you know, the temperature and light readings all in real time.
That's really cool. You know, I have a friend actually who works for Honeywell, and he uses a lot of these microcontrollers and things, but, you know, it drives me nuts. They still use Windows and DOS for their embedded stuff. I mean, he'll, you know, for data act stuff, he'll run Windows XP or Windows Vista in real time mode, which is just not that great. And their devices are still running embedded DOS, and it just kills me. So maybe this is an issue that I'll hand off to him, so maybe he can get inspired to do things more penguin-y.
Yeah, I mean this inspired me in a way because the cool project that I sort of talked about in my column. I see this now. I'm like, well, you know, maybe if I had a little Arduino device, and of course I knew a little bit more about hardware hacking than I do because I don't know too much about it. I could probably have done the project with this instead.
Yeah, because now talk about your article a little bit. I mean, don't spoil the whole thing, but basically, what'd you do?
So basically, we bought a new fridge, and so we had a spare fridge around the house, and I am a home brewer, so I make beer at home. And it's really important when you're making beer to be able to control the temperature. So I had this spare fridge, but fridges only get so hot. You know, they're really good at staying cold but not getting warm enough. So long story short, I figured out a way to take a laptop I already had, some of those X10 devices that can control power, and I hooked my fridge up to it, and had my laptop control the power of the fridge, and then found a cool little USB temperature sensor, put it inside the fridge, put the temperature sensor in the fridge, and then wrote a little Perl script that pulls the temperature and turns on or off the fridge whenever it gets too hot.
Cool. So it's kind of like a hacky version of a couple of the articles in this month's issue. So that's kind of cool. For those of us not so great on low-level hardware hacking, we can make beer. So now it's been a while. Is that batch of beer done?
Oh, yeah. It is done, and it is delicious.
Wonderful. That's good to hear. All right. Well, Kyle, I thank you. This is, again, I just love these issues. The Cool Projects issue is one of my favorite throughout the year. So thank you for going over this with me. And all of you, thank you for listening to Linux Journal Insider for the August 2010 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-July. Subscribers, if you're listening to this, you already probably have a copy in your hands or it's on its way. Hope you enjoy. Now, if you're into Linux stuff, check out page 15. I didn't mention this earlier, but we're offering the Ultimate Linux Gift Pack with stickers, a shirt, a calendar, a CD, all kinds of stuff. Feel free to buy it for yourself if you like. I won't tell. Next month is the web development issue, so be sure to tune in again. And don't forget to visit us at www.linuxjournal.com. We'll see you next month. All right. Welcome to the Linux Lubba Hubba Bubba. Got that?
We're keeping that, right?
Yeah.